Welcome to part number two of Greatest Halachic Hits of COVID. And in tonight's class, I'd like to discuss various issues that come up with COVID treatment on Shabbos. You know, there's a principle that pikuach nefesh, anything that if a person's life is in danger, we're allowed to and we're obligated to save their life on Shabbos, even if it means violating, quote unquote, any of the prohibitions of Shabbos in order to save a life. And with the COVID pandemic, there have been some, in addition to standard cases where, God forbid, someone is sick, so you'd be allowed to do anything necessary to save them. But there have also been some interesting questions that really touch upon what it would be considered pikuach nefesh. So some of those cases include, what can you call a hospital to advocate for a COVID patient on Shabbos? Can you drive home a patient who's been discharged from the hospital? Where do we consider pikuach nefesh only a current state, or do we account for what might be future pikuach nefesh? Also, calling one who is in isolation on Shabbos, and one that I find is fascinating is, what about medical research on Shabbos? There have been people who have been working tirelessly to develop a vaccine. So, and the vaccine can certainly save many lives. So can one continue their research on Shabbos? These are just some of the issues that we'll address in particular to COVID, but also just look at some of the general principles guiding pikuach nefesh on Shabbos. Why do we allow Shabbos violations for pikuach nefesh? And what qualifies as pikuach nefesh? So we'll discuss some of those questions. So I put the source sheet again in the chat and also share my screen.
Rabbi?
Yes.
A quick question. When we talk about pikuach nefesh, are we talking about Jew to Jew or Jew to non-Jew or Jew to any person?
So I think I expected that to be asked, and I wasn't trying to avoid it because I think it's a very important issue and could be at least a shear in and of itself. For our purposes, I'm going to assume it's a Jew to Jew, even though in practice it would likely apply elsewhere, and that would open up the whole issue of violating Shabbos to treat non-Jews, which is a very, very important issue. And if anyone would like, after 8:30, we can spend a little time discussing that. But for the time being, we'll just assume it's Jew to Jew. So, when we get to the question of pikuach nefesh, so first we have to ask the question, how do we know that pikuach nefesh overrides Shabbat? Right, it's so ingrained into our value system, and correctly so. But how do we know that? So the Gemara doesn't take for granted that it's the case. It learns that it's the case from several verses in the Torah put together to indicate that even though we're charged in general to keep Shabbat, that it's a sign to us, it represents our relationship with Hashem and our acknowledgement that he created the world. There are other verses that balance that and indicate that if there's a threat to life on Shabbos, we would be obligated to do prohibited labor in order to save one's life. So there are several verses in the Torah that charge us with keeping Shabbos and warn us against violating Shabbos. But the Talmud in Maseches Yoma addresses the following two verses and from there understands that one would be obligated to violate Shabbos if a person was in mortal danger. So the first verse is, V'shamru b'nei Yisrael sa Shabbos, that the children of Israel shall guard the Sabbath, L'asos sa Shabbos ador asam b'risolot, that to make Shabbos an eternal covenant for the generations. And And it continues, it's Oti Le'olam, that Shabbos is a sign. It's a sign that we acknowledge that Hashem created the world. The Chofetz Chaim actually compares this. He says, what's the significance of a sign? So he says, it's like a, it's two analogies. It's like a sign on a store. So the store owner may close his shop, it may be closed, but as long as the sign is still there, then the relationship is still intact. Then the store is still open, he's open for business, he's still operating. Another example is between a husband and a wife. So a husband and wife may argue, but the wife is still wearing the ring. So it means that they're still married, they're still connected. And when the ring goes out, so that unfortunately that reflects the severing of the relationship. So the Chafetz Chaim says that's the case with Shabbos, that none of us are perfect. There are certainly things that we don't do that we should. But Shabbos is so essential. Shabbos is a sign, because as long as we're keeping Shabbos, that indicates that even though we may not be perfect in other areas, the relationship is still there. We're still open for business and the marriage is still intact. So from these two verses, the Talmud learns that pikuach nefesh, the saving of a life, overrides Shabbos. Gemara in source 3 says, minayin lepikuach nefesh shedochas haShabbos. Where do we know that pikuach nefesh overrides Shabbos or pushes aside Shabbos? Rishim ben Nasiya Omer, Rishim ben Manasseh says, v'shamer ben Yisrael haShabbos, that the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath. So Amar Torah, so what does the Torah mean by that? Or what can we deduce from that? Chal alav Shabbos achas, you should violate one Shabbos, kidei sheyishmer Shabbosos harbe, in order to observe many more Shabbosos. Meaning, what's the Torah telling us? Why does pikuach nefesh override Shabbat, according to this?
It provides, I guess, a future for that person to be able to celebrate Shabbat again. They want that person to celebrate Shabbat again.
Right. Well, it seems like we're making a basic mathematical calculation. The Torah commands us to keep Shabbos. We're going to be in a situation where if we don't violate this Shabbos, so we won't be able to keep other Shabbatot in the future. So it's making a calculation. It's saying, in other words, invest in one Shabbos, sacrifice one Shabbos, in order that you can keep many Shabbosos in the future. We have a net gain of Shabbos observance. Charlie, look, are you going to say something? You're on mute. Charlie, you're on mute. There you go.
Okay, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now, yes.
Thank you. I don't get the connection here between the first two verses. How do those two verses come to point number 3?
Okay, so the second one, the Chai Bahem, will be the other opinion in the Gemara. We have Reb Shimon ben Manasseh, and now we're going to have Reb Yehuda in the name of Shmuel. So those are going to be two perspectives of why pikuach nefesh overrides Shabbos. So the opinion of Reb Shimon ben Manasseh is that we have a net gain. We violate one Shabbos in order to keep many Shabbosos in the future. And that's what we learned from Vishamra B'nai Yisrael Eshas Shabbat, that we want in general for the Jewish people to keep Shabbos. So we violate this Shabbos and we'll have more opportunities to keep Shabbos. And now we have Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Rabbi Yehuda says the name of Shmuel. If I'd been there, I would have said the Adifa Miditu, that I would say my proof for why Pikuach Nefesh overrides Shabbos is stronger. What verse does he give? V'chai Bahem. And that's source number 2. Ushmartem es kukosai vesh mishpatai. You shall guard my laws and my rules. Asher yaseh osam adam b'chai bahem ani Hashem. by the pursuit of which man shall live, for I am Hashem. V'chai b'hem, you should live by them. So what is Rav Yehuda saying in the name of Shmuel? What's the proof that you can, or that you must violate Shabbos in order to save a life? V'chai b'hem. The Torah says you shall live by them. V'lo yam, sheyamus b'hem. And you shouldn't die by them. But saying that's the teaching in the name of Shmuel is really more of a broader philosophical idea, I would say, that Rav Shimon ben Manasseh is being a calculation. If we violate this Shabbos, we'll have many opportunities to keep many more Shabbos. Rav Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel that no, this is a general principle when it comes to the mitzvahs of the Torah, that the mitzvahs of the Torah are given to us to live by them and not to die by them. So in other words, it shouldn't be the result of keeping a mitzvah that we die, with the exception of the three mitzvahs of murder, idolatry, and sexual immorality. Those are exceptions. But as a general principle, keeping mitzvahs shouldn't kill us, right? Because it's v'chai b'hem, that we're supposed to live by them. So you have these two verses, and there is some discussion about practical differences between them. But we'll assume as an overriding principle that barring the three cardinal sins, if we're in a case where there's a threat to life, so we would have to violate that rather than die or be killed. So you might ask the question, okay, what about what I just said? That with the exception of the three cardinal sins, so we wouldn't have to give up our life. Why would we think that? Meaning, why is the Gemara asking the question? Why does it need a source to specifically tell us that we must violate Shabbos in order to save a life? Right? Why don't we know that? Why isn't this just something that is generally understood? So one explanation for that is based on the following Gemara and Chulin, that Chilul Shabbos violation in general is really viewed as a different category, a special category of violation. It's particularly severe, which is why certain statuses have to do with whether someone is Shomer Shabbos or not. Someone is Mechal Shabbos, at least Mechal Shabbos out of spite, out of principle, is treated in some ways like a non-Jew. Because Shabbos is so important, because it testifies to the fact that we believe that Hashem created the world. And this can be seen through the Gemara in Chulin in source 4, that the Gemara says, Mekabim Karbanos Miposhi Yisrael, that we accept voluntary karbanos, even from sinners, kidei sheyachzru behen b'tshuva, in order that they do tshuva. So meaning in general, we hope that someone who brings a karban, a sacrifice, is pious, he's doing it for all the right reasons. But if someone is known to be a sinner, so we accept this refers to voluntary karbanos, we accept their karban, because, you know, through the act of bringing the karban, it might be aroused to do tshuva. And this is except for chutz mina mumar menasa kasayayin machal shabbasos befarhesia, except for a transgressor, meaning a habitual transgressor, someone who basically has forfeited the Jewish religion, someone who gives libations to idolatry, and someone who violates Shabbos in public. So the Gemara then understands this to mean that Shabbos is in some ways equated with idolatry, and idolatry is one of the three cardinal sins. So based on the severity of Shabbos, it seems like we need a special proof that one would be obligated to violate Shabbos in order to save a life, because otherwise we might think that Shabbos is akin to idolatry. Yes, Stephen.
Yeah, why can't we simply say that if it's not included in the 39 malachim we have for Shabbat, then there's not even a question of why wouldn't it be?
For sure. For sure. This is assuming that we are violating one of the 39 malachos, either on a Torah level or in some cases on a rabbinic level. But right, if there's something that's, for example, if I have a sore throat and I eat chicken soup, you know, the best medicine, so that's not a problem. But this is specifically saying that you're allowed to violate Shabbos on a Torah level in order to save a life. And perhaps the reason why we need these special proofs in source number three is because Shabbos in some context is compared to idolatry. That's why we have to know that for idolatry, you would have to give up your life rather than transgress. But for Shabbos, you are obligated to violate Shabbos, quote unquote, or to do forbidden labors on Shabbos in order to save a life. Yes, Moshe.
So if you don't mind, I just want to offer something that I've been thinking about probably for the past few years, because I really find it alien to be talking about Pikuach Nefesh and then looking at Pesukim where I can find this. And it strikes me that Pikuach Nefesh has always been around. It was around before the Torah. It was around before Abraham Avinu. It is a universal function, for lack of a better word, that we find very important. We want people to do. We talk about Samaritans and everything. And this is, it's like in the Pirkei Avot, one of the three Amudim or whatever that the Olam stands on. One of them is Gemilut Chatzadim. And to me, if you had to find anything, that's where it would go. So number one, we don't start with any Chumash. We don't start with any Pasuk. We start with that idea, period.
That we so have to look at. I agree that it is.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
No, so I can say it's definitely a certain human emotion or human tendency to want to preserve life. But I don't think it's necessarily true, and certainly not. You mentioned in before Avraham Avinu, in the ancient world, it was considered a virtue, as not even only to sacrifice your own life, but to sacrifice your children's life for out of worship.
Of course, but that was, you know, it must have been such a tiny minority because it didn't really last in too many places. But in any event, so I think that's the principle. That's where the principle comes from, and then we look at the issue of Shabbos. The truth of the matter is that when you're in a Pikuach Nefesh situation, and I'm not going to try to describe what that means, but when you're in that, you don't have any Shabbos. That's the truth of the matter. You're dealing with the Pikuach Nefesh, and really, rather than make you crazy more about the Pikuach Nefesh, you know, it's time. It's interesting because the Pasuk says V'shomru bnei Yisrael as HaShabbos. Why doesn't it just say Shabbos? What does it say? HaShabbos. There's Shabboses that you're not supposed to keep Shabbos. Because you don't need another Mishigas. Excuse me, I don't mean to be, you know, ridiculous, but you don't need a Mishigas when you're in Pikuach Nefesh. That's how I look at it, because I honestly don't.
So yes and no. Meaning there are the three cardinal sins where one would have to give up their life rather than transgress. Meaning it's not.
No, but that's okay. See, my response to that is, then you're really getting into what is Pikuach Nefesh. And you have a lot of sociopathic and all sorts of emotional and mental challenges that are Pikuach Nefesh. So today they're considered Pikuach Nefesh.
They are, and we'll get to that. No, I hear the point that there's a certain human tendency of self-preservation that we do think about and consider how to preserve our lives and the lives of those around us. But I would push back a little bit to say that it's necessarily assumed, especially because you brought up in the world that predated the Torah, you know, this is the Torah that predated the world, but before the giving of the Torah at Har Sinai, I'm not sure it was necessarily the case that we'd assume that it was self-preservation at all costs. But the point is, I definitely think it's a strong point that at the end of the day, we do want to save our own life, but
I'll give you an anecdote. One final anecdote. I was in this sort of situation several times with my mother just a few years ago. And I always drove to the hospital. And another close family member would walk. And when he showed up 2 hours later, it was sort of ridiculous. It was beyond ridiculous. It was, you know, why'd you bother?
So we'll touch upon that a little bit. It's not, I mean, each case is different. But we'll see. It's not necessarily always the case that everything is pikuach nefesh. But we'll touch upon that a little bit. But obviously, individual cases, especially as they come up, are definitely have a lot of different factors to consider.
Okay, thank you.
So once we establish that the Torah not only permits us to violate Shabbos when there is a threat to life, but we're told very strongly that we are required to, and not only required to, but you shouldn't think that you're more from if you don't. Or you shouldn't think, well, it's very nice that the Torah says that we can violate Shabbos. That's not for me. I'm a big person in the community. Torah says specifically not. In source number 5, the Gemara says, "Einos in devarim alalo lo yavdei nachrim belo al yedei kusim," that telling us this is a pretty powerful statement. It's telling us, you might think that, okay, we're allowed to violate Shabbos in order to save a life, but if I can get a non-Jew to do it, and they're not required to keep Shabbos in general, maybe that would be a better option. But it's saying, no, you shouldn't do it through Gentiles, v'lo yidei kusim, and not through Samaritans, ela al yidei gedolei Yisrael. Rather, you should do it by the greatest of the Jewish people. Some understand Gedolei Yisrael is the greatest Torah scholar. Some understand Gedolei Yisrael refers to adults as opposed to minors. But either way, we're told we shouldn't think better to avoid personally being Mechal Shabbos or personally doing forbidden labors on Shabbos when we can get other people to do it. No, it should be the greatest person, someone who's, if you say it's an adult, someone who's obligated in mitzvah, someone who's a distinguished person, and not a non-Jew, not a minor. He's Tanur Rabbanim, if I can be who I never for Shabbos, as Zari is Harezem Meshuba, that one who engages in saving life on Shabbos and one who is vigilant to do so is praiseworthy. You don't have to go ask permission, meaning as long as you know the general rules. You should do it yourself, and you shouldn't hesitate at all. And the Rambam says very, very strongly, we'll see, this is unusual that the Rambam goes into such depth and or describes at length. He says in source number 6, "Asur lismameya b'chil Shabbos l'chol sheyesh bo sakana." It's forbidden to hesitate before transgressing Shabbos for a on behalf of a person who's dangerously ill. That which a person shall perform to live through them, as we saw in the Gemara, that the Torah's mitzvos are given to live by and not to die by. So halamadata she'ein mishpatei Torah, it comes ba'olam ela rachamim v'chesed v'shalom ba'olam. She's telling us a very powerful and important principle about mitzvos. What are mitzvos supposed to do to us and do to the world? It shows us that the laws of the Torah don't bring vengeance to the world, don't bring a certain callousness, meaning if the Torah did tell us that we couldn't violate Shabbos in order to save a life, so that would, I think, result in an insensitivity towards human life, but just the opposite. The Torah is not supposed to cultivate that. Rather, ela rachamim v'chesed, rather mercy, kindness, v'shalom ba'olam, and peace to the world. And watch what he says. Ela bikorsim she'omrim shezechil Shabbos ve'asar alehen, the heretics who say that if you violate Shabbos, this is Shabbos violation. This is a sin. Asar alehen akasu v'omer. So we apply the verse from Yechezkel that gave them harmful laws and judgments through which they cannot live. Meaning someone who says, you're violating Shabbos to save a life, that's chil Shabbos. They're heretics. That's heresy. That the Torah is given for us to live by, to cultivate in us compassion and mercy, and one shouldn't hesitate at all. It's forbidden to hesitate at all, and one who does is called a shofek damim, someone who spills blood. And Rav Soloveitchik pointed out that this formulation is unusual of the Rambam. The Rambam in his Mishneh Torah, as a general rule, tends to be concise. And it's understood that he chose his words very carefully, which is why among students in yeshiva and the Beis Medrash, so there is we often will analyze a particular statement or word used by the Rambam very carefully, because it's assumed that if the Rambam used a particular word or formulated in a particular way, that it was deliberate. So it's unusual that the Rambam, in his Mishneh Torah, which is a book of laws, okay, just tell us that you're obligated to violate Shabbos in order to save a life. Why does it say that this teaches the Torah's judgment? Don't bring vengeance to the world. He's giving us a more of a philosophical explanation. It is unusual. And Rav Soloveitchik says in source 7, says Maimonides, that master of conciseness, deviated from his regular manner and treated this issue with great elaborateness. And in order to tell us the teachings of the Torah do not oppose the laws of life and reality, for were they to clash with this world and were they to negate the value of concrete physiological, biological existence, then they would contain not mercy, loving kindness, and peace, but vengeance and wrath. Meaning that's ultimately in the full picture what the Torah is supposed to cultivate on earth. That a world of mercy and loving kindness and not vengeance and wrath. So that's why the Rambam has to tell us. We might think, oh, we're so religious. We don't, you know, that's not for us to violate Shabbos. No, this is the Torah specifically wants you and mandates that you violate Shabbos in order to save a life. So don't delay. Don't delegate the responsibility to someone else. Rather, if there's a life-threatening situation, one should be very quick to do whatever is necessary to save the patient immediately. Okay, so he said that in a case where there's a threat to life, that one is obligated to transgress any of the prohibitions of Shabbos. But it's not the case that every type of illness or ailment is a case of pikuach nefesh. But if I stump my toe, it's hard to say that that's pikuach nefesh. Maybe if there's certain type of injury, if it's with a metal, a tetanus, but generally, a person can be uncomfortable, a person can be a little bit sick, but it's not, we wouldn't reasonably say that it's pikuach nefesh. Moshe, you had your hand up? You're on mute.
Sorry, that was from before.
Oh, that was from before. Okay.
Recognized me before.
Okay, just looking out for you.
No problem.
So he said that if someone is in mortal danger, so you would be allowed to violate any of the prohibitions of Shabbos. But there are different categories of illness. So the lowest category of illness has additional stringencies when it comes to rabbinic violations. And then I'll tell you what I mean. So the lowest category of illness is what's called mechush ba'alma. Someone who has a general concern, they're a little bit uncomfortable, right? You have a little cold, you have a little headache. That's something you'd still go into work for. You might still go out to your Shabbos meal in normal times, but you're feeling a little bit under the weather. So for such a person, you're not allowed to violate Shabbos. But there's an additional stringency that the sages prohibited refuah on Shabbos. They prohibited for a person who only has a mild ailment to take medicine on Shabbos. So if someone is having just a very minor headache or a little bit of congestion, so you wouldn't be able to take medicine on Shabbos. Why? The concern was that you may grind up medications. That a person, if they're a little uncomfortable, they may be a little bit desperate to cure this minor ailment. And especially back in the time when people would grind up herbs for medicinal purposes, so sages were worried that people would be tempted to grind up medication. So they prohibited the taking of medication for someone who's in this category of mechush ba'alma, someone who just has a mere bad feeling. Yes, Stephen.
So I've heard, I mean, on two different drashot that the person who's sick, who would need to take medicine, is someone who can't stand up. In other words, they have to lie down. And the second point is that I thought that the one about grinding herbs has to do with, in the old days, they used to use cornstarch to have to form pills. In other words, they may have had some ingredients, but they needed something to bind them together and they had to use it. And I think that was there was a big tshuva on whether or not that qualified as whether or not that considered work to have to, and my understanding is that that was not considered to be malacha.
Well, grinding up would be the malacha of tochein, of grinding.
Oh, okay. Even for medicine,
malacha. So that's what the concern is. Now there's a discussion. Yeah. Nowadays, we generally don't grind up our medications, but most of the poskim, there are a couple of leniencies maybe in certain cases, but most of the poskim assume that just like other rabbinic decrees, even though if the reason isn't as widespread, the decree still applies. So that's category number one. And then there are categories in between. So the other extreme in the second paragraph, Mishiyesh l'choli shel sakana, mitzvah l'chalas ha-shabbos, v'azari z'hari z'mishubak, v'ashoel hari z'shofek dam. So it's the extreme that we said. So if someone has a dangerous illness, is in life-threatening danger, so you should hurry to break Shabbos, and someone who asks about this or hesitates is considered a murderer. Okay, so those are the two posts. This mechush ba'amla, just a little bit uncomfortable, you can't even take medication. If someone is in mortal danger, then you can violate Shabbos. But then there are intermediate categories.
Rabbi?
Yes.
I have a question for you. I thought it's a mitzvah for us to enjoy our Shabbos and to be happy. And even if you're feeling not terribly ill, but it's really preventing you from enjoying your Shabbos, why can't you take an aspirin or Tylenol or something so that your headache goes away and now you can enjoy the Shabbos? And we're supposed to enjoy the Shabbos. Isn't that a mitzvah to enjoy the Shabbos?
Right, but if there is a competing factor, for example, if I mean to take an extreme example,
you're not grinding.
I would enjoy Shabbos by driving to the beach. So you would never say that. But the sages were concerned that people would grind up their medications. So they made this decree. As Stephen said, that if someone is more seriously uncomfortable, someone basically would have to stay in bed. It's not just their general uncomfortable. It'd be more something like a very bad migraine where they have to put their head down. So in that case, a person would be allowed to take medicine. And then you have these intermediate categories where for some of these situations, you would be allowed to either ask a non-Jew to do work for you, which is two rabbanans. One, the rabbanan of asking a non-Jew, and two, asking them to do a rabbinic labor. In some cases, you would be allowed to do a rabbinic labor with a shinoi in an unusual way. In some cases, you would be allowed to do a rabbinic labor. Basically, we have the whole spectrum. We have nothing asking a non-Jew, rabbinic labor with a deviation, and Torah level. So there are different categories. We could spend a lot of time on this, but just some of the basic guidelines. So if it's an internal illness, we consider it more severe. But if it's just general pains, so then you can ask a non-Jew to give us a case where you have a toothache and it's really pains you, so you can ask a non-Jew to extract the tooth. And in some cases, you would have to have a doctor evaluate it, but basically it runs the spectrum. What comes out of this is that not all cases of either discomfort or even illness are considered pikuach nefesh. Pikuach nefesh, we really understand that there is a real threat to life. Charlie, sorry.
I asked you at the beginning, is this Jew to Jew or Jew to non-Jew? I'm getting my answer, but the example so far is Jew to himself. Now, when we say pikuach nefesh, are we talking about your own nefesh, or are we talking about somebody else's nefesh?
Both. Both. If there's something that you need to do to save yourself, or there's something that you need to do, or that someone needs you to do to save them.
What does the word pikuach actually mean? in Hebrew?
So more like in like the matter of, or like in the investigation of, like pakeach is like to look into the matter of a life.
Okay. Okay. Pikeach Ivrim.
So one who opens up the blind. A pikeach is someone who is, in general, pikeach is someone who is intelligent.
All right. Okay.
Or who is?
Okay.
So you have the really this running spectrum of different types of conditions and different allowances for them. But if there's any type of, or if there's any type of danger, so you would be obligated to violate Shabbos. And not only if there's any type of danger, but you look at source number 10, even if there's a doubt or even a remote possibility of danger, you would be obligated to violate Shabbos. The Mishnah says in source 10, Bod Amar Rabbi Masya ben Charash, Hachoshesh Begrono, someone who's concerned about his throat, Matilin Lo Sam Betok Piv B'Shabbos. You put medicine in his mouth on Shabbos. Bimnei Shu Safek Nefashos, because this is a doubt about life. It's called Safek Nefashos Doknes HaShabbos, that any type of doubt about a something that's life-threatening pushes aside Shabbos. So Misha Nafla Alav Mapola, Safek Kusham, Safek Enosham, someone who a ruin collapses on him. You don't know, you're not sure if he's there or not. You're not sure if there's anyone under the rubble. You're not sure, Safek Chai, Safek Meis. You don't know whether he's alive or dead. It's meaning you have two doubts. You don't know if someone is there. And if someone is there, you don't know whether they're alive or dead. The Pakin Alav Esaga. You remove the debris. Matsu Chai, the Pakin Alav, the Meis, Yanehuhu. But if you find him alive, so you remove the debris, and if you find him dead, the Mishnah says that you don't violate Shabbos, even though we're very particular and we take very seriously the value of kavod hames, of honor for a dead person. But we say when it comes to Shabbos violation, we only violate Shabbos for someone who's alive. So what we've established is, Pikuach Nefesh, if there's any threat to life, even a double doubt, even a remote possibility of threat to life, we would be obligated to violate Shabbos. In other conditions, we're not. So then we'd have to see how this applies to some of the more recent COVID-related cases. So here's one case. What about if someone, God forbid, has a relative in the hospital over Shabbos, this is for COVID, but this presumably wouldn't apply uniquely to COVID. And especially, so this was written a couple of months ago, and Schechter lives in New York, when hospitals were very overwhelmed and they were understaffed for the amount of the volume of patients that they had. And unfortunately, as what I understand, it wasn't due to any type of intentional neglect, but unfortunately there were patients who weren't able to get the treatment they needed just because the hospitals were so overwhelmed. So the question is, let's say someone had a relative in the hospital, and as things generally work, that if the person in the hospital has an advocate, you can make some sort of connection with the doctors or nurses, they like you. The reality is the patient may get better treatment. So sometimes you have to keep up the momentum, right? You schmooze with the doctor or the nurse once. Okay, they'll like you for a little bit, but memory is short. So what if someone has a relative in the hospital over Shabbos? And it's likely that if you call the hospital over Shabbos and speak to the doctor, speak to the nurse, that they'll be more sympathetic to your case and will give your relative better treatment. Are you allowed to phone the hospital on Shabbos? So Rav Schechter says that you can. He writes in source 11, Davar Yidua, that it's known, Sheke'esh, Shabbat Yacholim Aleim, Al Kol know, some that it's known that the hospitals are packed. Vein maspig rofim achios atavil bakulam kideboy, and there's not enough doctors and nurses to treat all the patients properly. And vein sharim l'dnei v'shpachalah shar sham v'beis acholim, and the family members aren't able to stay in the hospital over Shabbos. And that would probably be the best option, both for Shabbos considerations, but also for the patient and for advocating on their behalf. But because it wasn't possible because of the dangers that COVID presented, unfortunately presents, so gam sakana hulahem, that it's also a danger for them to stay there. But yimishkasir rofe, but if you can make a connection with the doctor, shvaka zachole, elbe zachole, midabar ima rofe, dishmo ima chiyos, that you speak to the doctor or the nurses, lazar dem otave lachole mesuya. And he shows you Sharosh Shechein Yasu, that they may, that may result in improved care for the patient. So what, so what's the calculation? Mila, Sas Yotar Sharosh Yikya Kola Hu Ishari Bechayin. So he's saying if the family makes a connection with the doctors, he says the Sas Yoser, there's just, there's a little bit more of a chance that they'll have better treatment and that will allow them to live. Meaning it's not so extreme. I mean, okay, it's possible the treatment will be a little bit better. And you know, you'd hope that it, that system wouldn't be corrupt, that that your only chances of living are if the if you have a connection with the doctor, but it may even plant the seed and maybe make the healthcare workers more aware of your case, and there's a little bit of a chance it could potentially be life-saving. So he says, he quotes from what we saw in our Mishnah in the Gemara, Shafilo Isfek Sveika Shel Afshar Shel Bikuach Nefesh Mechalim Es HaShabbos. Even if there's a double doubt, you know, remote possibility, they we violate Shabbos. And he says that not only is this allowed to call the hospital to advocate on their behalf, but it's proper to do. And he said, the filu b'shabbos or b'yom tov. He said that you can do call up, or he said leave the internet open. And because this is a, has a, even a, he says, even a small chance of improving the care of the patient and helping them to, in the long term, to be able to live, based on that, small possibility, he permitted calling the hospital and advocating for the patient on Shabbos.
Rabbi?
Yes.
This all really is common sense, because if the person advocating, perhaps that person himself is a doctor. So if that doctor is going to help that patient who he's advocating for, then certainly if a doctor can do it, so can anybody else do it who isn't a doctor.
Right, but a doctor maybe is actually giving medical advice. Meaning this is just saying, if you have a certain connection with the doctor, you develop a certain rapport, maybe then they'll give you a little bit of improved treatment. So it's not so clear that that'll be the case. Meaning you could maybe push back and say, you know, what are the chances? Doctors are professionals. Everyone's getting care. Is it really going to be a difference between life and death? So he says, probably not, but because if we have any sort of doubt or if there's any type of possibility that it will help save a life, so we allow Shabbos violation. So another case that Rejector addressed is driving home a discharged patient. I'd say a hospital requires the COVID patient to be in the hospital for a certain amount of time to get treatment, but especially with COVID, you don't want to stay around the hospital longer than you need to. They don't want you around and you don't want to be around. So let's say a patient, a Jewish patient, is able to be discharged from the hospital on Shabbos. So can a Jewish relative or friend pick them up from the hospital? Or might you say that they should take a taxi with a non-Jewish driver? So Rav Schechter said that question number one is, let's say you can be discharged on Shabbos, but you But if you waited a couple hours, the hospital would let you stay or wait around until the end of Shabbos. So should you choose to be discharged on Shabbos, if you can wait until after Shabbos, what do you think? The question came to you.
Pick him up.
Yeah, get out of there as soon as you can.
And specifically for COVID.
Pick him up.
So question number one. Answer number one, Rosh Shechter says that even if you had the possibility, let's say you can be discharged at noon on Saturday and Shabbos ended at 6, even if you had and you asked the hospital, they said, yeah, sure, you can wait around a couple hours, no problem. Even if there was a possibility, he says it's not advisable to stay in the hospital longer than necessary, so you can leave the hospital on Shabbos. That's number one. Number two, if you have a choice between going into a taxi, which would be asking a non-Jew to do work for you, would be only via rabbinic prohibition, or having a Jewish family member pick you up. So he says, because he writes in the Hebrew that we can't be so certain that the taxi driver doesn't have COVID, especially at this was written in March or April. It's in New York, it was very widespread. You can't bank on the fact that whoever's going to pick you up doesn't have the virus. So he says that a Jewish family member would be permitted, not only be permitted, but it would be preferable that a Jewish family member or friend picks the discharged patient up from the hospital rather than using alternative forms of transportation. And now the question is, as a general principle, we can downgrade in many cases a Torah prohibition to a rabbinic prohibition if we perform it in an irregular manner. If we use what's called a shinui. Generally, we consider Torah prohibitions as far as the work done on Shabbos that it's only Torah prohibition if it's done in a normal, productive manner. But if it's done in an unusual manner, then it will be, in many cases, a rabbinic prohibition. So what about driving the car? Driving the car, turning on the car, and operating by all accounts would be a Torah prohibition. So Rav Shechter says that if it's not going to in any way compromise the care of the patient, so it would be preferable to turn on the car in an unusual way. So for example, he says for newer cars that don't have a key, that have a button. So the question is, sometimes an unusual way would be, let's say you're right-handed to do the action with your left hand. But he says pressing a button with your left hand, if you're right-handed, isn't really, it may not meet the threshold of being a shinui. It's not so hard to do it with the other hand. So he says, if possible, I press the button with your knuckle, or do it in some sort of unusual way. But he says, when you're driving the car, drive the car normally. Because if you're driving your car with your knuckles or your knees, it may compromise your driving ability. So he says, for sure, when you're driving, don't make any changes. But when starting it, so if you can start it in an unusual way, so that would help minimize the Shabbos violations. And then what about turning it off? This is a good question when it comes to driving someone to the hospital. So you have the cars on, but can you turn it off? So Pshat says that turning it off would be a rabbinic violation of extinguishing, because you're not using it. A Torah violation of extinguishing would be to make charcoal, to have something productive come from it. So he says that if there is going to be a significant loss, he didn't define what it was, but maybe it's you leave it in a parking lot, your car's going to get stolen, something is significant loss, so then you could turn it off with a shinui. But when you're driving it, drive the way you would normally drive, because it would be dangerous to do otherwise. So another question is, let's say there's a healthcare worker who's in the hospital all day, and the health practice is to shower as soon as they come home from the hospital, to change their clothes and to shower upon returning home. So let's say there's a healthcare worker who is working Friday, and by the time they get home, it's already Shabbos. So not allowed to bathe in hot water on Shabbos. One, the turning it on could be a violation of cooking. And even if the water is preheated before Shabbos, there's a rabbinic prohibition of washing one's whole body. So what's the consideration here? So far, we've been talking about pikuach nefesh as someone who is in a life-threatening situation. But is this healthcare worker who returns home currently in a life-threatening situation? Are they sick?
No, but sakanot nefeshot overrides that as well.
But what's the sakana?
The endangerment of the people around who that healthcare worker. That person is not really in the state that they should be around people who are not sick.
Meaning it may present a danger. Right. So yes. The objector says similar because he acknowledges that it's a question, meaning it departs from some of the conventional cases of pikuach nefesh, where you're dealing with a person who's currently in mortal danger. But he says, based on the Brisker Rav, Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, that pikuach nefesh can also take into account what might happen in the future. Exactly as you said, that someone that it may be they have whatever contamination on their clothing or in their body could spread it to others or become sick themselves. So we would factor that in. We wouldn't consider it full-fledged pikuach nefesh where you can do any type of violation. But he says that if someone is very uncomfortable showering in freezing cold water, so they could turn on the warm water, even make it hot with a shinoi in an unusual way, which would be rabbinic. And someone would allow that even in that situation. Since you could otherwise stand the cold shower, then you can do that. He's not really a life-threatening case at the moment, but because we have a concern about what may develop, so if someone's going to be very uncomfortable showering in cold water, they can, in an unusual way, make it lukewarm. Another question is calling someone who's in isolation on Shabbos. So we discussed this last week with the Zoom Seder, and this is actually from the same tshuva. I quoted another part last week where he says that you can't, just if someone is alone but there's no danger, you can't call them or Zoom into them on Shabbos or Yom Tov. But he says here that if someone has to be in isolation and it's known that this person, if they're alone, and this was before the 3-day Yom Tov, would potentially have either come into real danger, God forbid, or even have a certain breakdown, that would be considered in the category of pikuach nefesh, and a family member should, not only can, but should check in with this person, family member, a friend, to check in with them in order to make sure that they're okay, because the assumption is that this person is a result of the loneliness, which is very difficult for anyway, and may cause them to either, God forbid, harm themselves or even be in a situation where, as Rav Schechter said, we'll go crazy. Meaning in a real way, it won't necessarily be life-threatening, but will have a significant mental health impact. He permits, but says that it's proper to check in with that person to make sure that they're okay. And now we have the final case that I want to take a look at. We have a few minutes, and that's, what about research on Shabbos? There are people working around the clock, and it seems like they're successful at developing a vaccine. So let's say a Jew is on the team that's researching and developing this vaccine. They work for Pfizer or whoever else. Can they be involved with their work on Shabbos? What do you think? Any
I'm going to say no.
Why not?
Well, a doctor could work on Shabbos or Yom Tov if they have to, because they're actually saving lives. But the vaccine is not actually saving lives. It might potentially in the future, but it's not at the moment.
It's not doing anything right now.
Yeah. So I don't see how there could be a reason for that.
Anyone say that they can go to work?
Yep. I do.
Why? I think they should go to work.
So I think my connection dropped a little bit. Charlie, you said yes?
Should go to work.
Why?
You can't separate yourself from such important work.
Okay, so we'll see. We'll see. Rav Asher Weiss, one of the contemporary postgame, addresses that question. But first, let's set down some of the considerations in this question.
Rabbi, so at this point, if one is up to date on what is going on, there is a clear and almost direct linkage between the time that vaccine will be available and saving lives. So every day, if not every hour, counts.
So we're working against the clock. And once we have it, we'll save countless lives. So here's some of the considerations. So the Nolde Biyuda, Pesach Landau, a couple hundred years ago, said that he addressed this question. The question was not about Shabbos violation, but about performing an autopsy. As a general rule, we value the kavod ha'meis, we value treatment of a corpse, and we don't demutilate it or do anything to it unless it's medically necessary or unless there's a productive purpose. But if there's ever a conflict between something that is a compromising the state of a corpse as opposed to a living human being, so the living human being always takes precedence. So the Nolde Biyuda addresses the following case, that there is a patient who is suffering from gallstones. They performed the surgery on him, but the surgery was unsuccessful. So now the doctors ask, can they perform an autopsy in order to see where they may have gotten wrong and what they could do better next time? And potentially through this, they'd be able to prevent the same fate to other patients. So he says, if you're going to say this is pikuach nefesh, so then of course. But he says in the case under discussion, if there's no patient that needs it now, the doctors just need it for their research, then he says you can't violate even rabbinic prohibitions. Because if we were to say that pikuach nefesh includes any possible life that could be saved in the future, so then they say ein l'davar sof, there would be no end to this. You could say, well, let's always prepare prepare medications. We'll get everything ready just in case there's someone who needs, even if there's a remote possibility. So he says that you have to distinguish between something that's near, that's more immediate, and something that's far off and more remote. And the Chasam Sofer, Moshe Sofer, says that, how do you evaluate? Basically, you say, in the case that the Chesed Landa was speaking about, but in that case, if there was a person who, let's say, needed the surgery now, and the doctors needed to do this autopsy in order to determine how to correctly do the surgery, so then he said they would be able to do that. But if it's more for general research, he wouldn't permit it. And the Chazon Ish says that it's not literally whether the sick person is there or not, but basically how immediate it is. If it's something that realistically will more immediately, and it could be hard to define, but more immediately save lives, then you can violate other things in the Torah, whether it's an autopsy or Shabbos. But it's something that's more remote, and it's not even definite, so then we wouldn't allow Chilul Shabbos on that particular Shabbos. So regarding the question about vaccines, Rav Asher Weiss, based on these couple of sources that we saw, answers the following. He says that the consideration is of, well, first I'll ask you, in the case of COVID, are there sick people in front of us? Or is it an urgent matter? Is it an immediate matter?
It's immediate. If it has to do with your own life, it's immediate.
Right. So I think you could say even stronger that there are hundreds of thousands of people potentially who need this life-saving or treatment now. Or you can say if you're looking to prevent the entire world, basically. So there's certainly a case to be made that we have this immediacy. But you have other factors that would prevent you, that would not allow you to break Shabbos. So he says, in order to judge our question, we have to consider the following: that are you going to say, the main question he deals with is, are you going to say that this particular Jewish researcher going to the lab on Shabbos is directly going to save lives? He says it's hard to say. He says the fact is people are working around the world, right? And it takes a long time to do. Nothing is really immediate. And true, you're working against the clock. But he also says the fact is, one, there are non-Jews who are at the lab who are working on this. It's not like you don't go to work and nobody's working on this. There are other people working on it. And he says, even the non-Jews, no one works 24/7. Everyone takes some sort of break. So instead of taking a vacation, you'll take off on Shabbos. So he says that based on that, even though you have the factor of sick people there and it is immediate, but to say that this individual Jew has to or be allowed to work on the vaccine on Shabbos, as part of this overall project, he says, wouldn't be allowed. And he says that's how he says is the bottom line. So there is as much to be said. These are all very big topics and complex topics. But what we see from here is that our mitzvos are given to live by. And I think as the Rambam says, they're meant to cultivate within us a sense of compassion, sense of mercy, and understanding that this is that compassion and concern for other people doesn't compromise our devotion to Hashem. That we shouldn't say that I'm devoted to Hashem, I have to keep Shabbos. No, Hashem, in a certain situation where there's a pikuach nefesh case, Hashem wants you to violate Shabbos. So Hashem wants you to care for other people. That's what His Torah endeavors to develop, and that's what we're supposed to do. That saving other people is the ultimate service of Hashem. At the same time, there are cases where we would not be allowed to violate Shabbos, and in our current situation, we have to evaluate the cases with somewhat different criteria as they did in former times, based on what we know about preventative medicine. But these are very interesting things to look into, but in Hashem, we should have the people researching and developing the vaccine should be successful. The ultimate rofe kol basar, the ultimate healer, should send everyone who needs a refuah shleima, and I believe these questions should all be theoretical. Could I just ask